Across the country right now, college admissions officers are picking through mountains of applications. And while the most selective schools have always had more applicants than they can admit, there's a concern about one group of students who are not applying. WBUR's Fred Tice reports how the brightest low-income students often don't think they can get in or afford a top-tier school.
Former college admissions officer Sean Logan tells a story about a student from Salinas, California. At the top of her class, both parents, migrant farm workers, she wanted to go to Stanford University, but did not think a highly selective university would find her interesting.
And tears start falling down her face, and she said, "Look, I'm from a little small place where, I mean, I can't compete, but how do I do this?" And I said, "Look, I've been doing this a long time. You're going to be a great applicant for a lot of schools." Tears, just tears streaming down. Like, I wasn't going to apply.
At the time, Logan worked in admissions at Williams College. He traveled the country looking for exceptional students from unusual places. He persuaded that student to apply. She got into Stanford and every school she applied to. Logan, now the director of college counseling at Phillips Andover Academy, says he saw this all the time.
It's an unusual experience for me dealing with kids who just don't understand sort of how good they are, right, and what their opportunities are. And a place like Stanford for her is going to change her life, right? The opportunity is to interact with a range of students that's brought into Stanford. She's going to graduate with no debt.
Public universities used to be the most affordable, but with crunched federal and state budgets, many are not so affordable anymore. And the best endowed private colleges are devoting more money to financial aid. But tens of thousands of the best low-income students don't apply to the hardest schools to get into, and thus miss the opportunity to graduate from college with no debt. Chris Avery, a professor at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, is among the scholars who've identified this problem.
Many of the highest achieving students from the poorest families really shut the doors themselves. They don't apply to any selective college anywhere.
One reason? They don't know about those colleges. Adam Falk is president of Williams College.
We are a small college in a corner of Massachusetts. We're not the most obvious place for a student to go who is coming from South Central Los Angeles, from a large urban school who may not even have heard of us.
Another reason low-income students don't apply to the most selective colleges, they don't realize they can afford to go. Jennifer Desjarlais is dean of admissions at Wellesley College.
We're admitting students regardless of their ability to pay, and I think that's not the norm, right? For most colleges and universities, we're fortunate to have the resources to do that.
The large endowments of some of the most selective schools enable them to welcome low-income students. At Williams, one in seven students is a first-generation college student. President Adam Falk says the college's $2 billion endowment allows it to pay for their education and to make sure they don't drop out.
We don't lose students at Williams. And that's a great advantage to being a small place. Well over 90% of our students graduate within 6 years.
Many students don't realize which colleges are in the best position to invest in them. As Assistant Director of Admissions at Wellesley, Maggie Farnsworth knows this firsthand.
I had a student 1 year. She had taken what she had thought was a full ride at her local state university, but it only covered tuition. But she didn't read the fine print until after she had deposited, and it was way past our deadline. And she called and she goes, "Oh my goodness, I didn't realize I'm now going to have to pay room and board." And, you know, room and board these days is thousands of dollars.
Another reason students don't apply? They don't think they're good enough. Rob Andrews used to work for a foundation going to high schools that sent few students to college.
I remember one of my students who is graduating from Brown University this year said to me, her sophomore year at Brown, "If I hadn't met you and you hadn't told me to look at this school called Brown, I would be at community college."
Rob. Rob. And I think it was instrumental in making me realize that I was smart enough.
Maria Hernandez emigrated from Mexico to Chicago at age 10. She attended Waukegan High School, one of the largest in the country. She had a 4.0 grade point average, but
it was very difficult for me to understand and accept that, you know, I deserve to be at a school like Brown. I think Rob was instrumental in helping me realize the potential and helping me explain to my parents why coming to college was a good decision.
Hernandez says her parents told her that with a high school diploma, she would make more money than they did, and so it was time to go to work. Rob Andrews persuaded them that college would not be a waste of time. Andrews is now director of college counseling at Prospect Hill Academy, a charter school in Cambridge. Because he and another counselor together advise only 60 seniors, he's able to make sure the best students do apply to the most selective schools.
They will trust me when I say, like, no, I know your friend applied to this other school and they didn't give you financial aid, but that school doesn't give good financial aid. This school does. And it's even better than the school that you think that you should be going to for who you are.
But that counseling often does not happen in schools where guidance counselors are overtaxed. The average American high school guidance counselor has 476 students, and most are not college-bound. Colleges adopt different strategies to find high-achieving, low-income students. At MIT, Dean of Undergraduate Admissions Stu Schmill says on the road, his staff focuses on the schools that don't have good counseling resources.
We don't need to visit the schools that have good guidance counselors and parents who are very involved, because those students already are quite conscious of MIT.
At Wellesley, part of the strategy is to make it easy to figure out how little a student would have to pay if she attended. Wellesley devised a simple web calculator that lets students figure out in 3 minutes what their costs would be. Wellesley economic professor Philip Levine devised it.
The majority of them think that the only price that they know of college education is the sticker price. And that just is not the case for the vast majority of the population. About 90% of the population would be eligible for financial aid if they were to attend Wellesley College.
In the last decade, a California nonprofit called QuestBridge has transformed the way colleges find low-income, high-achieving students. Part of its success comes from its application, accepted by 35 of the most selective colleges. Natalie Ornell from Braintree used it when she applied to Wellesley. It allowed her to write more in-depth essays than the common application, so she could provide context about how she grew up.
I was able to write more about my life and my background, some of the challenges I faced growing up in a single-parent household.
Amherst has 16 QuestBridge callers in its incoming class next fall. They come from trailers, subsidized housing, rural Kentucky, tiny homes in the South Bronx. Their SATs, taken in junior year, are in the high 600s. Dean of Admissions, Tom Parker.
Think about how intelligent those kids have to be. This is not the group that's been tutored. These are, you know, kids who probably took those SATs cold.
Low-income students represent a growing percentage of graduating high school students. So these low-income kids represent the future of America's intellectual power. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Fred Tice.